Check. Hello. Hello. You are listening to X-Ray FM at KXRY Portland at 107.1 and 91.1 FM, streaming online everywhere at xray.fm, as well as on the coast at 91.7 in Nehalem, Rockaway, Wheeler, and Manzanita. Shout out to the coast. Come on down to the Slingshot Lounge. That is where I am right now. If you are listening on Thursday, August 13th, 2026, you have tuned in to a live broadcast of this radio show. That's right. Thursday, August 13th, 2026. This is a live broadcast from the Slingshot Lounge. I'm on the back porch as I speak. I'm excited to be back. It's been a while since I have been in Portland, I feel like. Maybe not that long, a couple weeks. And I have a special guest tonight. He is going to join us soon, Jimmy Radosta. Is that how I pronounce your name, Radosta? Radosta, excuse me. Jimmy Radosta will be joining soon. And if you are listening and you're nearby the Slingshot Lounge, we always love to have people come by. You never know who's going to show up. It's been a while since I was here, so please don't be shy about coming by. Or the thing we really love people to do is text this radio show. So if you are listening right now and you have your phone nearby, come on over. You can sit down, Jimmy. Jimmy was like waiting patiently away. Sit over right over here. Please get your phone out and put this number in your phone. Even if you're not inspired to text right at this minute, text us at some point. Just have it ready. The number is 971-220-5979. Whatever you text, I'll read it out loud over the radio, assuming it's not too crazy in some way. I can't read your profanity, but I can give everyone an idea of what it is you're saying. You can send pictures, whatever you want to text. This is your chance to get it out into the world. So 971-220-5979. Text the radio show. I'll read it out loud. I love it when people, we like to call this beginning part of the show the roll call, meaning just tell me if you are, just tell me if you can hear my voice. That would be helpful because I never know exactly whether I've connected correctly or, it's happened if you've listened to the show before. There'll be dead air and I'll have been talking to myself for like 10 minutes. But it sounds like I do have connection. I just got my first text. It's Tall Tim. It says, Tall Tim, welcome back to the ether. Chuck Barris claimed he was a hitman for the CIA. Okay. I'm trying to like understand the Chuck Barris. Oh, Chuck Barris. Now I remember why we were talking about him. Tall Tim, thank you for your text. And yeah, I guess last week was a rerun, so I wasn't in the ether. I was in Los Angeles last week, and I had to stay an extra day. I thought I was going to be back in time to do the show, and then I had to stay an extra day, and I didn't have any equipment, so I ran a rerun. The reason that you mentioned Chuck Barris was the previous show 2 weeks ago, the guest told a very bizarre story about Chuck Barris. You know who Chuck Barris is. Wait, let me turn off Jimmy's mic here. Okay, Jimmy Radosta, say hello.
Hello, Arthur.
I should give you... Wait, here, do you want some headphones?
Sure.
Put these on. I told Jimmy he was coming on this in the second half hour, but I'm just going to have come say hello.
I don't mean to jump in prematurely.
No, no. Well, just because Chuck Barris, I feel like, is kind of up. You must know who Chuck Barris
is. Oh, yeah. I'm a big game show aficionado. How could I not?
So Jimmy is like, I've known you for quite a while. I believe we met through the like storytelling scene here in Portland. Correct?
Yes, I believe you were on the storytelling event I produced for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon.
Yep, that's right.
About people telling the worst dates they'd ever been on.
Yeah. And
do you recall which date you spoke of?
Yes.
Not to dredge up something personal right away.
No, it was quite a story, actually. I had to like call people in advance to make sure that it was okay if I told it. That was a while ago I told that story.
That's where, and then the last time we ran into each other was on Broadway while you were rushing to a surprise birthday party and I was picking up some recycled toilet paper from my favorite recyclery.
We were the like classic guests who were late to the surprise birthday party and I didn't want to show up. We were so late that it didn't actually matter, but I thought we were going to get there and ruin the surprise in some way. But anyways, yeah, I saw you briefly.
Thank you for having me, though. Between those two long times apart from seeing each other, this is great.
And so the reason I wanted to have Jimmy on this show is you were a very funny storyteller and like sort of MC for those shows. I've seen you do storytelling for Backfence. I follow you on social media and you seem like you have this like really interesting, very deep knowledge of like pop culture, especially from the like my era, like 80s, 90s stuff.
I have huge holes in like current pop culture. I was just thinking if I ever had a pop culture Jeopardy team, I would have to find somebody to fill in those major gaps in like reality television or internet personalities and things like that. But yes, I do have a weird knowledge of a certain era.
Yeah, which I enjoy. I find it, I also like this. And so randomly, we had this guy who, I'm kind of spacing his name, he's an artist, and like a Portland, he was so entertaining and funny. And if anyone wants to remind me, he has a show coming up that I want to plug. But anyways, he told this story about how he used to hang out with Chuck Barris as a kid. Like his mom was friends with Chuck Barris. And apparently, like, and so if anyone does, Chuck Barris was the host of the Gong Show, famously, and always seemed like he was on drugs. Like, that was kind of his shtick. Like, he looked like he was super high. Mm-hmm. But for kids, like, you're younger than me, right? Like, I feel like...
I'm 54.
I'm 56. So, okay. Like, we're pretty much... Do you remember watching the Gong Show as a kid?
I mostly watched it in reruns later, but I was struck by just how coked up he seems. Like, he's so odd.
Yeah, but I didn't know what coke was or what, so I was just like, why is this man acting this way? I just thought he was trying to be funny. To get back to this text that this guy sent, Tall Tim, Chuck Barris claimed he was a hitman for the CIA. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, there was a whole George Clooney directed film about it called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
That's Chuck Barris?
Yes, played by Sam Rockwell. I mean, it's a very tall tale that he told. There's no evidence to any of it.
Oh, okay.
But good on him for, I mean, I love the idea of game shows living double lives because my obsession was Bob Barker, so I would love to imagine that he had a double life as a, I don't know.
So, okay, I guess I should see it. I never saw that movie.
Garbage Man.
Wait, what's Garbage
Man? I don't know. Bob Barker was a garbage man.
What? Oh, yeah.
in his double life.
Yeah, Bob Barker. Bob Barker hosted The Price is Right. I know, game show hosts. Anyways, and then Tall Tim has also said that Chuck Barris created the Newlywed Show, too, and a few more I've forgotten. I think someone did remind me he created the Newlywed Show, which was a big hit show in its day. Okay, another text says, RB with that new 5-month-old hip can hear you. I'm painting a bunch. I see. RB, it took me a second to understand this text. RB is the texter, and you got a hip replacement. 5 months ago. So you're probably feeling pretty good right now. We like to talk about, I got my hip replaced a year ago.
Oh.
So that's like a hot topic on this show.
Well, good for you, RB.
And RB got it. How are you feeling it? Because 5 months is about where you start feeling like you're really... Someone came in, Jimmy, this woman named Sandy Decor came in. This was like a few years ago, and she was carrying the top of her femur. Like, while we were doing the show, she had the, like, top of her femur that had gotten cut off to get a hip replacement.
Wow.
And ever since then, we've been talking about this operation quite a bit.
And did you get back to full flexibility?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I get to play basketball, actually, to like, bring it back to the subjects of this show. yeah, I was at the point where I couldn't play basketball, and now I can. So, RB, tell me how it's going. And I'm glad you're painting a bunch. Keep us posted. Okay, if you would like to join the conversation, 971-220-5979. Like I was saying earlier, we call this section of the show the roll call meeting. I just love to hear if just tell me who you are and where you're listening from, what you're doing. I'm always curious to know like what people are doing on a Thursday night in Portland. It's a beautiful night. It's like super warm. These are like the great summer nights. It's starting to get dark out. There was a point in which I would be doing this show and it would still be light out, but now we've turned that corner again and it's starting to get dark out, but it's still summertime. I have lots of stories I want to tell about my summer because I haven't talked on this radio show in 2 weeks because I did a rerun last week. But I want to hear people tell me what you're doing this summer. Like, I'm especially curious if people are going to music festivals. Tell me what drugs you're doing at the music festivals, if you're doing drugs at the festivals. Is anyone getting out to any of the nude beaches in Portland? I'm curious. I went to Rooster Rock yesterday. It was amazing. These are the days to get out to the river. So I just would love to hear about people who are doing this summer. 971-220-5979. You text it. I will read it out loud. And I should say at this point in the show, this is a two-hour show. We often talk about sex and drugs in an adult manner. So if you have young children listening or you don't like those kinds of discussions, we're on for 2 hours. I encourage you to stick around, but I do want to give or put the kids to bed. That's what I encourage you to do. This is like adult talk now. Okay. And if you're looking for an excuse to like light up your joint or, rip a bong hit, we're here for 2 hours. So I'll keep you company. Go ahead. Don't be shy. Okay, RB says that their hip is feeling great back in these streets on my on the skateboard. Wow.
Painting, skateboarding.
Skateboarding. Also went to Pickathon. Yeah, I want to talk about Pickathon, actually. Have you been to Pickathon, Jimmy?
I've only been there to camp, not to actually enjoy the festival. Because they let you...
I bike camped there,
actually. I bike camp about once a year. And that was our destination 1 year.
You can just go out there and camp on that land? Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Yeah, I think you rent it through one of those, you know, rental sites. I'm forgetting which website it was because my friend plans the route and does all the hard work. I just tag along.
I actually noticed that people, you can bike to Pickathon. We talk about Pickathon a lot on this show because it's one of my favorite festivals. It's so crazy because it's only like a half hour drive outside of Portland and you're in the woods. And so you haven't been to the festival itself.
I have not. And my partner, if I may, just embarrass him for a moment because he may be listening, but I think he would love for this story to be broadcast more widely. We were dog sitting for, this is my partner Andrew. Love you. We were dog sitting for some folks who were going to the festival. And as they were departing for the festival, he told them to enjoy their berries. And they're like, what? He's like, Pickathon. It's a berry festival, right? So, anyway.
What's funny is that people often think that Pickathon, because of the name, they don't go so far as Andrew did to think it's a berry festival. They think it's like a bluegrass festival, like it's a bunch of like old timers picking on stage. But it's actually like a very, very widely varied festival. Like they have metal bands, soul bands, hip hop, reggae. It's very like eclectic lineup, and there's all these stages out in the woods. And RB, who did you see at Pickathon that you liked? I made it to Pickathon for one day this year. I didn't get to see the band I really wanted to see. Acid King was playing at the woods stage. They have this one stage that's like super spooky and kind of in the woods. And they'll have metal bands play there at like midnight on Saturday night. And this band Acid King played there. But I did see, I saw the Womack Sisters, who were really great. They were like a throwback. Have you heard of this?
I know the Womack Brothers.
Yeah, I think they're the daughters of like Bobby Womack and like these sort of famous soul people. And they were like amazing. They sounded kind of like, it's like a throwback, like the Supremes almost, but with a modern twist. And the other thing I wanted to say was I saw Zia McCabe, who do you know Zia?
Of course you do.
Everybody knows Zia. Zia's been on this show a bunch. She's like been in your seat, as a guest. And she came on the show sort of briefly to plug this. She was building this giant synthesizer out in the woods at Pickathon. And, I want to have her come and tell the story of it all, but she was building it and then, she was raising money for it. It was having trouble to get it all built. And so when I showed up on Saturday, she was like completely exhausted because they'd been working all weekend to keep this thing going. And I guess it finally gave out like on Saturday, like it stopped working, but it was a sort of big art installation. And, when I saw her, she had just like taken her psychedelic drugs because she was like, I'm sick of this whole thing. And like she took, and so, I'll have her tell the story. I don't want to like give away too much, but. People do a lot of psychedelics at Pickathon. Mm-hmm. Okay. Liesl is texting in. Just says, Liesl, only lurking. Did you see LB? Longtime favorite. Used to see him at Burbadi's. Did he have a full band like he used to? I saw your signature on her hoag. On Zia's hoag. Yeah. Yes. Wait, I'm trying to think of who LB is. Did I see LB?
Is LB the person with the hip?
Oh, I know there's RB.
Oh, it's RB. Okay.
Oh, maybe that's what you meant. Did you mean RB? That's RB. Is that what you meant? I didn't see RB at I'm not even sure who RB is. What's funny is like people text into this show and I've met like a fair amount of them because they'll either come by the radio show or I'll see them at like events that we're talking about. But I don't think I've met RB. I'm like sort of looking over.
I'm not very good with text slang too. I use punctuation in my text and apparently that's passive aggressive.
Yeah.
And
is it?
Yeah. It can be read really the wrong way by younger generations.
Oh, really?
Like, wow.
That's actually really interesting. I was just having this thought earlier and if anyone wants to chime in, because this is like right up my alley, because so I'm 56 and every once in a while I find myself in a text conversation with someone who's younger than me and I do the same thing. I feel like it's not just like I'm old fashioned and prim or whatever, but it seems rude almost to me to like write to use all these abbreviations and everything. And but apparently I feel like I send the wrong, I also write long paragraphs in text, and apparently my daughters tell me that that's like rude and that young people can't read long paragraphs anymore. Is that like what does it mean to use like punctuation?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was my first indication though that those text messages that supposedly were sent to Charlie Kirk's assassin or by Charlie Kirk's assassin to, his alleged lover were totally fake.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I'm being a conspiracy theorist. Now,
wait, tell me
what
about
you these?
No, we love conspiracy theories.
There are these text messages that say, I'm sorry, lover, but the hatred just got too much for me.
I see.
And it's written in this way that, like, no 20-something
they don't write that way.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Do with that information what you will, but I'm not buying it.
I feel like when I'm texting with young people, I feel like I'm like, they're like impressed with my grammar and stuff, but I must sound like an old fuddy-duddy to them. They're like, who is this jackass, like, writing, using so many letters to write
represent
this
thing? For good grammar.
Anyways, RB says that their favorite bands that they saw at Pickathon were Acid King. Yep, I wish I'd seen it. Elcott. I think I know who that is, but I Mercury, Quasi, Womack Sisters, yes. Sin Seers, and Built to Spill. Yeah, I actually think I saw Elcott, and I forgot. There was a bunch of bands that I saw where I was, you just kind of wander around because there's like 6 to 8 stages at Pickathon, and you're just sort of wandering around. Often you'll like come upon a band and watch it, and you won't know who they are until you like look at the schedule later. And RB said Acid King killed. Yeah, Acid King's like friggin' great band. I just like one of the best metal bands playing right now. Okay, Liesl, Lyrics Born. He played with Poly. So Liesl explained that LB is Lyrics Born. He played with Polyrhythmics recently. I don't even know who that is. Lyrics Born.
I've heard of a lot of these folks, but okay. I must say I'm not going to pretend like I've heard them.
Okay, this text says, Arthur, please describe with specificity the cause and nature of your text with younger people. My friend Chris Hansen wants to know. it's usually, I mean, that's a good question. It's usually somewhat work related because I work in the film industry, so there's a lot that would be that. It's strictly, you know what I'm saying. But also I have two teenage daughters, so most of my conversations along these lines are with my teenage daughters about this. That's what I mean. But I get your what you're saying.
I guess there was a Chris Hansen A24 trailer that came out this past week.
Oh, really?
Robert Pattinson.
Oh, yes.
I haven't watched it yet, but
I was a producer on this film about To Catch a Predator, like a documentary about To Catch a Predator, did you watch that show at all? Do you know, like,
I'm not into true crime really, except for when it's really campy, like Wild Wild Country, that kind of thing.
Yes, I love Wild, like we
or Tiger King, you know.
Yeah, I like Tiger King. This documentary is called Predators, and it came out about a year ago, and it's just kind of like exposing the whole, like, To Catch a Predator was the original, like, gotcha, like, let's catch criminals live on camera show. And like, two of their predators ended up committing suicide, like, one, like, during the shoot of the show, and then another one shortly after. And so the NBC took it off the air. And then it spawned all these copycat things that are all over YouTube now. And so that's what the documentary is about. It's not like a favorable review of it.
Mm-hmm. I'll check that out.
Gender Bones here. LB is an abbreviation for pound. Oh, often referring to cannabis. I don't think she was asking if you'd seen a pound, though. I didn't know LB. Yeah, that could have been,
But thank you. That was an endeavor to be helpful. That's appreciated.
Appreciated. Liesl says, sorry to abbreviate like that, like I'm younger than you or something. Ha ha ha. Total long texter, too. It's because we're Gen X. We simply can't help ourselves. Yeah, I guess it's a Gen X thing. It's a, like, you, like, I hope this show isn't like exclusively for Gen X people, but I know that there are a lot of people in the Gen X who listen to this show. I think, but it is, it does, like, why I like doing it is it has a certain analogness to it, or it's just a little less, like, screen-oriented to do radio. Like, I always liked talk radio in the 80s and 90s. Like, that's a Gen X thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you ever listen to talk radio shows?
I strangely enough, I listened to Dr. Laura Schlesinger while I was still closeted. It was like this weird sort of self-punishment, I think.
I forgot about Laura Schlesinger. My God. What was the name of her show? Like, do you remember that?
It was just the Dr. Laura Schlesinger show.
And she would take live calls on the air, and she would kind of berate people for being, like, not getting their act together. She was, like, conservative.
Yeah. And you know, homophobic and all the thing, and anti-women. I mean, just
did people call her saying like, I'm gay and I want to not be gay?
I think it was more like actually gay people. It's more like people who are struggling with what to do about a gay loved one. And she was sort of like the love the sinner, hate the sin kind of nonsense.
Okay.
So yeah, just. But then she had that great takedown on the West Wing where a Lord type character who got read the riot act by the president.
Right.
And so that's gone viral. And so, you know, she's since become an avatar for what she is all about. So I think she served her purpose. And also she helped me, you know, get out of the closet. So, you know.
Like, what about Laura Schlesinger helped you?
I mean, just I think actually more like she came at a time when I think I realized I needed to come out of class. I guess she didn't have much to do with it, but she just was part of that narrative that was just like, ugh, that no.
Well, and so yeah, there were
but I don't mean to paint all talk show with that. I mean, talk radio has served many, many interesting purposes. I listened to Howard Stern a lot, and he entertained the hell out of me, and so
yes. No, I agree. I would listen to Laura Schlesinger too. I find talk I just was always so desperate for talk radio when I would be driving or whenever that I would listen to I'd listen to Rush Limbaugh or whatever just to disagree with him. Like, but he was a very good talker, and so was Laura Schlesinger. And
Rush Limbaugh introduced me to that Pretenders song, "My City Was Gone." And I remember when I found out what the song's actually about, like the environmental devastation of Akron, Ohio. I was like, Rush, do you even know what this song's about? And you're using this funky bass groove from
It used to be. I guess it still is that way it's always that conservatives use like the most liberal music for their like the Trump playing YMCA and like, but it's always that I feel like that's always the theme song for all of these, like conservative shows are like these like liberal musicians. Yes, the Pretenders used to open. I always wondered how that happened. Did Chrissy Hynde ever, like, did they object to it, or they just didn't control
Maybe it was a short enough riff, or I don't know. It does seem... She's also kind of weird with some of her views. She's very radical in some ways.
Oh, maybe she was
supportive
of him. Well, anyways, yes, I think talk radio is kind of a Gen X thing. Okay.
I love her, by the way. But
Chrissy Hynde?
But yeah, she's just wild.
Yeah, is Chrissy Hynde, like, does she still out playing music? Is she, like, can you see her? Like, have you seen her live?
I follow her. Oh my gosh, she's in that, I think I might have sent you my top 20 concerts of all time list. Uh-huh. She made that list, yes.
So yeah, Jimmy and I,
late 90s at Roseland Theater. Was anybody there?
I'm gonna tease this for our next segment, is we're gonna talk about great concerts that we saw. I think it's going to skew heavy to like the Gen X type music. But if people want to join in the conversation of best concerts you've ever seen or, you know, concert experiences, that's coming up in our next segment. Let me just read some more text. Someone sent
We should also talk about an awful concert too.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's
bad concerts.
Got one
that's
awful
true.
Concert that they remember.
The Chris Hansen texter sent a GIF with like, Chris Hansen saying, take a seat. This is Tall Tim says, maybe they should change the name to Chicken Pick and Funky Fawn for Pickathon. Chicken Pick and Funky Fawn. Yeah, I didn't really read that right. I mean, I do think that the name, misbrands what Pickathon is, but I really do highly recommend that festival if you're curious about that kind of like nature Oregon festival.
And it's weird because it's completely surrounded by suburbia.
Yes. Yeah.
It's completely developed all around it, but that is an oasis.
Yeah. It's a very strange, like when I first moved to Portland in 2006 and I think Pickathon started around then. I'm not sure of that, but it was kind of a new festival. And I remember going early, and it it was out in the country, like it's in Happy Valley. But then in the past 10 years, it's been like, it's this farm. It's on a farm. And it's just been surrounded by like very like expensive housing, kind of suburban Happy Valley housing. But it's still, I'm amazed that Pickathon continues at that location, actually. It's kind of wild. Like at some point, I feel like the forces are going to like conspire to not have that farm there anymore. It's just a very odd anomaly. But for now, I would go out there while you still can. It's a really amazing thing.
When I'm in Happy Valley, I think of the opening song from Mickey and the Beanstalk. You know, where the harp is singing, "Oh, what a happy day." That's Happy Valley.
It's Happy Valley, yeah. You know, it's just Happy Valley. It's a nice name for a place. Okay. So I'm going to take a break. We always like to play music from bands that are playing in town this week. I also always like to have our guests give us a song to play during the break. I think I'll do first. I'm going to do bands that are playing in town this week just to do that. So the first is ZZ Top is playing at the casino up in Ridgefield on Friday night, tomorrow night. And I'm kind of a ZZ Top fan.
Like, how appropriate that I actually was at a record store in LA and Billy Gibbons was there as I was on my way to see Madonna.
No way.
And Madonna is one of my choices tonight.
Yes, and so we are going to play.
Sorry, I'm being a name dropper, but it was pretty cool.
Did you?
Just hanging out at the record store.
Did he have his like long beard?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I pointed him out to my friends, and they're like, "Who is that?" And I'm like, "Who else has a beard like that?" Like,
there's a guy who, I don't know if he's listening tonight, but this guy who texts this show a lot, who has a beard, he calls himself Gold Gay, and he's like, he has like a full on ZZ Top beard, and he just recently shaved it off. But, yeah, you could, ZZ Top.
And I think he's the only original member playing with them right now, because the drummer just had to drop out of this tour.
And the bassist died, didn't
he?
Yeah. He did.
R.I.P.
So, yeah, I remember seeing that. I've seen ZZ Top a few times. Anyways, the casino's sort of a weird place to see a show, but ZZ Top is still a classic band, and I love their, like, early 70s music. So I'm going to play Just Got Paid by ZZ Top. And then when we come back, Jimmy Radosta and I are going to discuss our favorite concerts that we've seen. And please, text in 971-220-5979. If you're listening on August the 13th, this is a live show, so text us, 971-220-5979.
X-Ray FM is proudly supported by our friends at the Portland Mercury. The current city guide issue is available at over 500 locations in the PDX metro area and everywhere online at portlandmercury.com.
Hello, hello, hello. We are back. This is Sex, Drugs, and Basketball. If you're listening on Thursday, August the 13th, 2026, you have tuned in to a live broadcast of this radio show. Not only that, we're live from the back porch of the Slingshot Lounge, my favorite place to do this show. If you want to come say hello, you are fully, highly encouraged to do that. I'm just right on the back porch. I've got my friend Jimmy Radosta here. He has gone to get something to eat at the bar. but we are going to talk about concerts that we've seen. I was asking people to say, like, best concert you've seen, or maybe worst concert you've seen, too. Those are always interesting. We were talking about Pickathon, also kind of Gen X. We were skewing towards Gen X because Jimmy and I are both identify as that. But I'm totally serious about coming down to say hello. We are just on the back porch. It's, we're just sitting in the corner. There's some people with dogs out here. You know, it's a chill scene at the, Slingshot Lounge. Nice warm August night. These are the greatest nights. The summer nights. Come on. Ooh-ah for those summer nights. Let's see. We got a text that says, best concert I've ever attended was Vortex in Milo McIver. Wow. I didn't know they did concerts in Milo McIver Park. That's the park that's on the Clackamas River, right? Milo McIver. Where is that park? Is that down? Anyways, I didn't know they did. And that was the best concert you ever saw. When was that? And do they still do concerts at Milo McIver? That's an interesting answer. Liesl says, so Lyrix Born is a hip hop artist from the East Bay. Came up with, so we were talking about, musicians that were playing at Pickathon, that played at Pickathon, a couple weeks ago? Not this last weekend, but the weekend before. So Lyrix Born is a hip hop artist from the East Bay, came up with the Quantum Artists, performed lots with Latif, the True Speaker, and Gift of Gab. Used to come to town tons, centers his wife in his show, and she is a tiny powerhouse. He did a bunch of great vegan cooking videos during COVID. He can get silly, but definitely a force majeure. force majeure. I would check it. I would check that. That sounds like sort of a hip. At Pickathon, they love to have these kind of like, they're hip hop artists, but they're sort of like, sort of world beat hip hop artists. I don't really know how to describe, but it's often like the, it's not just your, like, mainstream sort of pop hip-hop artists. You often see those at Pickathon. But I did not see Lyrix Born. Here's someone. Jimmy, this is our texter, Jenda Bones, says, I saw the Pretenders at the Arlene Schnitzer in 94. There was a banner of a pot leaf in the middle of the stage during the opening band, but there was no mention of it until the Pretenders came out. Chrissy went right over to it and said how they still smoke. She was wearing a sleeveless leather shirt and was seriously threatening to throw anyone out that had binoculars or was trying to take pictures. Apparently, she had major track marks she didn't want anyone to see or document. Whoa, okay.
What's this?
This was at the Arlene Schnitzer in 94. What do you think of that? Do you think... I didn't know she had... But do you think that's really... that? Like, that track marks thing, like, is that really... Do we know that that's true, or...
I know nothing, but that's...
But maybe she just...
She sounds like quite a survivor, if that is the case, so...
Well, I'm just, I think there's other reasons why you might, I don't know about binoculars, I guess, but, I mean, yeah.
Stars Vanity is so interesting. I saw Echo and the Bunnymen at this, New Wave Festival, and they were the only artists who didn't allow themselves to be, broadcast on the jumbo screen.
Oh,
and
interesting.
I was like, oh, it's cause, you know, Ian McCullough, the lead singer, I think, was just like, not having it.
Well, it's interesting about jumbo screens. I was thinking about that because I see a lot of concerts now with jumbo screens, but back in our day, like, jumbo screens are a recent innovation. Like, people who go to concerts now, like, you expect a jumbo screen if you're, true. It's a big concert. But we used to have a very good time at concerts and there was no jumbo screen.
Oh my gosh,
like,
yeah.
We just, like, and in some ways I think maybe it was a superior experience. Like, I don't mean to sound like just a Luddite there, but the jumbo screen makes you feel like you're watching a big movie and you're not really paying attention to the live performance so much. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing bands in the 80s and 90s and from not good seats, but like still enjoying the concert quite a bit. And I don't know. It's just a weird phenomenon now.
Yeah. I mean, at Woodstock, they were football fields away mm-hmm. from
right.
the stage. And right. they were having a great time.
I think it becomes more like the great thing about a concert, and like this sort of segues into our concert. But like what I love about live music, especially like big concerts, is this sort of group experience. It's also why I love like live sports and basketball and stuff, is like the adrenaline of like everybody sort of vibing on the same thing. And so I would say, yeah, like that's an, I mean, you're saying that Echo and the Bunnymen maybe didn't, they just didn't want themselves blown up 50 feet tall.
I mean, like, they just kind of stood out that they were the only ones,
yeah.
But you know, it's their body, their choice, you know, I mean, God bless them. It just was kind of like, interesting.
I see some jam bands, like, I guess Fish, for instance, like, they will, every once in a while, they'll, like, but they have a very visual, like, light show,
mm-hmm.
but it's not all about the jumbo, like, the making a giant image of the band that's playing. Like,
true.
I think, which is a good way to kind of split it down the middle.
Well, and speaking of that, one of my top 20 shows is Billy Strings, and uh-huh. that was, and speaking of drugs, one of the shows that I had the best experience at because I was so present for it. I mean, uh-huh. I don't do jam bands, uh-huh. but that's where I got the closest to a jam band experience, and I was like, oh, I get it now.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's having a good time, and it was amazing, and he was uh-huh. so talented,
yeah.
And the visuals were something else. It kind of weaved in between the visuals and him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's, and that was at the Edgefield, which is also, if you're in the right spot, uh-huh. one of the best places to see a show.
If you're
far back, it's not so fun.
Totally. That's some good advice. Like, for Edgefield is a wonderful outdoor concert venue, but if you want to actually enjoy the music, you just go up close. Like, don't. Like, if you sit kind of out in the field, you just feel very removed from it. It's fun to, like, walk around. It's in a beautiful, like, sort of vineyard setting. But if you want to, like, really enjoy the music, you got to get up close at Edgefield. I totally agree. I've seen
Stevie Wonder at the Edgefield, also uh-huh. top 20.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's
amazing.
It's a great place to see. When did you see Stevie Wonder?
That was, like, 2007, maybe.
Wow. Okay. How long have you lived in Portland?
Since 95.
Since 95, okay.
And then I'm a lifelong Oregonian. I grew up in Salem.
In Salem. So you moved here, like, shortly after you graduated from college. You were like, I
went to college in Southern California. Because I'm a celebrity chaser. And I was obsessed with the soap opera Santa Barbara. But also, I wanted to get a journalism degree, so there was that as well.
I forgot about that. Your thing that you wrote that made me be like, I gotta talk to Jimmy. I wanted to get you on this show. You were like totally obsessed with this soap opera Santa Barbara.
Yeah, and it was weird because I was closeted, but yet I was totally out. Uh-huh. About my love for Santa Barbara. What I didn't tell people about was that I loved Eurythmics, because I thought people would think I was weird for that. But the soap opera, I had no problem telling people about.
It's funny that, yeah, I mean, in hindsight, when we think about that, I mean, the Eurythmics, I also know is that your favorite band, the Eurythmics?
They are my all-time favorite band. I got to meet Annie Lennox at a book signing last December, which was like a pinch me moment. And I also got to interview Dave Stewart, the other member of Eurythmics, when I was a writer for Just Out, the LGBT newspaper, around 20 years ago.
So, like, that was a band that was, I came up in the 80s, but to say that you liked the Eurythmics wasn't like automatically to identify as gay.
She was androgynous.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Salem, and in Salem, to like anything that was out of the ordinary was just to call for trouble. I wasn't ready to be standing out as abnormal, but I did, come out as a Eurythmics fan towards the end of high school. This is what's going to come out, actually, when I'm going to be reading from my high school newspaper columns in Mortified in November. And so I come out, and then I start writing about Eurythmics a lot. And it culminates in me quoting from them in my high school commencement speech. I'm trying to quote some inspiring lyrics from this song called King and Queen of America, where I'm like, we're going to build a little satellite. We're going to make it fly. We're going to send it up to heaven, all the way up to the stars. Although they made me take out the heaven part because didn't want to offend anybody. And all of them aliens are going to find out who we are. Anyway, it was just that. And by that point, everybody knew I was obsessed with Eurythmics. So they thought it was really funny that I injected it. A Eurythmics reference into my speech. And also I injected a Madonna reference into my speech because the title of it was We Have a Connection, which was a reference to her song, Keep It Together, which was a hit, like, right at that moment. And so these were all things that only I could appreciate. But
when did you, like, officially come out then?
Not until I was 27.
Oh, my God.
Pepperdine kind of messed me up because Pepperdine was a super conservative university.
Yeah.
I had my first, romantic experience there with a closeted jock. And so that just shoved me back in the closet for a while. Uh-huh. And then I finally figured out how to come out. I needed to figure out how to do it right. You know, I was listening to Dr. Laura, like we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is turning into a therapy session.
But then
I have to explain why it took me so long. But this is how my brain works. And then when 27, I did it, told everybody. And then within 1 year, I was working at Just Out, the LGBT newspaper. So I went from closet case at 27 to professional homosexual in 12 months flat.
Were some people like, when you came out, were they like, that's not a surprise? Like, we knew that all along?
My folks, absolutely. Uh-huh. Which made it the easiest, you know, coming out. They're like, yeah, thanks.
That's funny. Well, okay, let me catch up on some text messages because people have been texting. And please, if you're listening on August 13th, 2026, Thursday, August 13th, 2026, this is a live show. We'd love for you to text in 971-220-5979. My guest is Jimmy Radosta. He's a storyteller, a man about town in Portland.
What's in your top 20?
We're talking about top 20 concerts that we've seen. Jimmy sent me his list of top 20 concerts. It's funny because you said you don't do jam bands, and like I've seen a lot of jam bands. Like I used to see the Allman Brothers a lot, and so I always kind of took this one Allman Brothers concert I saw in Telluride, Colorado, and I was tripping on mushrooms, and it was like at the end of a 3-day festival, and the sun, it rained the whole festival, and then right as the Allman Brothers came on, the sun like went under the clouds and created this crazy sunset, and it was finally sunny, and all us hippies could dry out. And it was like an amazingly trippy, musical experience. And it was, wow. I was like this. And the funny thing was that I was living in Telluride, Colorado that summer. I was working construction, and the next day was Monday. And I remember like I was supposed to be at work at 8 a.m. And I just remember thinking like nobody's going to work after that, like that was like such an epic concert that the whole town is going to like take the day off to recover. And so I showed up at like 10 or 11 for work, and the foreman was like, so he was like, why did you do that? Like, why did you think that was okay? And I remember just, it was sort of a lesson. I just remember thinking everybody was so affected by that concert the way I was.
Wow.
But they weren't. It was just a regular concert to them.
Have you read Cameron Crowe's memoir yet?
No, but I love, you mean like his almost famous kind of stuff?
No,
like
the one that just came out.
Oh, no. Is he having...
I got to see the book event with Eddie Vedder interviewing him up in Seattle. And,
oh, cool.
And he tells an amazing story about Greg Allman. And
oh, really?
It's so intense.
Cameron Crowe is amazing. Yeah. He really is. So Cameron Crowe, just if anyone, like he's a filmmaker, and also he made Almost Famous, which is like an amazing story of his kind of life, and he was a writer for Rolling Stone, and so he met all of these amazing musicians. Like, I guess I assume that's where he gets the Greg Allman story, is as a writer.
Yeah. Yeah, and how Greg Allman basically kept him on the edge about whether he was going to give permission to allow this, all this work that he had put into his first big get, allow it to be published. But it's so dramatic the way he tells it. It's so good.
I can't
wait to dig into the book. I'm actually one of those guys who buys books and then just lets them sit for quite a while until I can finally just sit down. I'm waiting for the weather to get worse.
Uh-huh. That is what someone was asking me about Portland. It is what's great about Portland is like, we have these like amazing weather. Like right now, you should be getting outside and doing all this stuff, and then we get these. There is something kind of nice about the cold, rainy winter. It's like it's an excuse to just sit inside and read, and you don't feel guilty for staying inside. All right, let me read these text messages. Please keep your text messages coming. 971-220-5979. Okay. Gosh, there's so many text messages. I've lost track. Okay. Pizza Johnny texting in and says, a year ago today, we were at Weird Al. He did like 10 costume changes.
Amazing.
Weird Al Yankovic. You were at his concert here in Portland a year ago? That's cool.
I saw him in Salem. Had the same experience.
Weird Al Yankovic. 10 costume changes. Yeah, he's apparently like an amazing live show.
And he deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's a campaign right now. Yeah.
It's wild that this guy, I mean, when he came out in the 80s, he was like kind of just this like carnival, like we thought he was funny, but no one would have guessed that he'd be still touring and like selling out venues.
He's had a hit in every decade for 4 decades.
God, that's
wild.
And
the fact that he gets permission from all these artists too, that's what I really appreciate. Nirvana, Michael Jackson, they all have senses of humor about it.
Why is a Weird Al live show like so entertaining? Like why is it better than just
multi-generational? It's like our generation introducing it to our kids, and it's just everybody's nerding out and having a good time. Everybody knows and loves these songs.
Okay.
And he also, I think, just loves his job.
Yeah,
and that's so apparent.
Yeah, it's funny that people that if you had told me who would have, like, it would have been fun in the 80s to try to guess who would still be around, like, have a long career and who wouldn't. I'm not sure I would have correctly guess. I would have guessed the Eurythmics actually, like, were going to still, like, they seem like they were, like, onto something, and they still, mm-hmm. like, they still are cool.
When I was at Pepperdine, somebody I knew somebody who dated him.
Anyway,
Weird Al, sorry.
Oh, Weird Al. Yeah. I was like,
this is my random Weird Al connection I just had to throw in there.
Okay, this text says, this is RB, says, 1993, I think these are concerts that the best concerts, Alcoholics, Souls of Mischief, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, at Warfield, this is all in one show.
Wow.
Alcoholics, I don't know who Alcoholics are, I know who De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest are at the Warfield, so are these all kind of like, 90s hip hop. There was like a great period of hip hop. If you like, this is again, this is Gen X slant, but I loved De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest. It was like this amazing Arrested Development, like all these like kind of mm-hmm. cool hip hop bands that, they all came out in the early 90s.
De La Soul does lead to a bad concert story of mine though, but we can save that for later. put that in the back pocket.
RB says, I second Lyrics Born Bay Area. I'll second Lyrics Born Bay Area legend. Okay, yeah, I haven't heard of Lyrics Born, but I totally take your word for it. Okay, this is Gendabone says, got put on the guest list recently by Will Sargent at Revolution Hall. I was told more than once to stop recording. But then the Gendabone sends a recording of the... I'm just going to play. Well, I don't really know what I was watching there. It's a recording of the... Yeah, at Revolution Hall, they don't like you to record the shows.
I didn't know that.
People do record at... like, but it's considered a little like... which I appreciate. Like, it is... Again, I'm Gen X, but I find it annoying when there's a lot of screens in the air while I'm trying to, like, you know, like, I definitely will record bits of concerts that I see because it's fun to do, but it is, like, it is nice when it's limited.
I was sitting on the side, and there's nobody behind me, uh-huh. Amy Mann. I hope that was okay.
Yeah.
I also get peeved when I'm just watching somebody scream through a show. But I was in awe. She is amazing. And so I did record a couple clips, just clips.
Well, I feel like if you are able to record in such a way that, like, I think it's, hey, Emily Hempson in the house. If you're able to record in such a way that you're not, like, if you're holding your screen up high, then I feel like you should be aware that you're kind of bumming people out. I'm so excited that Emily's here because you're going to tell us, hopefully, about your experience at Portland's Funniest Person. Okay. All right, let me just go. I'm going to buzz through these texts and then... okay, this is... this says, asking for what's the best concert you've ever seen is kind of like asking what's the best F you've ever had. Even though a good F is always at the top of the list. I will say the shows almost always leave a more lasting impression. Well, I think that's a fair analogy. It's true. Like, you get to the top concerts, it's like, yeah, like, it's hard to pick a favorite. Is that what you're saying? But everything, it's just all awesome. Yeah, and that's why, I mean, Jimmy gave me a top 20, but did you have a one that you would say is the best?
That would be too hard. I guess the one that will always stick out, though, is being literally one Prince away from Prince at the Roseland Theater. I mean, it was a rare, rare show where he was at that kind of a venue, uh-huh. and it was 3 years to the day before he died. Uh-huh. But it was... I mean, he was this far away from me, and just watching his guitar moves, it's like, it's otherworldly. I mean, so I'll never see a show quite like that.
Uh-huh.
But then, I mean, it all depends on how you rank some of these things. And that's why I think it is hard to quantify or qualify these things. Like, getting to also see on the same stage where I gave my graduation speech, like, Pearl Jam opened for Nirvana, opened for Red Hot Chili Peppers, like way at the beginning of their career. That was pretty amazing in Salem.
Wow.
So it, And then I was also at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony for my favorite band, Eurythmics. And it happened to be also where Duran Duran and Dolly Parton and Lionel Richie and Eminem and all these other
icons. All got it.
And guest stars like Dave Grohl and Steven Tyler.
Wow.
All on the same stage.
Together. So you, this is like the Hall of Fame induction ceremony?
Yeah.
Is it hard to get tickets to those?
I mean, I just had to join the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to get early access to tickets. That was $50. And then my tickets were like $400. So, I mean, it was an investment.
Not cheap, not cheap.
But thank God it was in LA and not in Cleveland.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking that. Well, yeah, it is. I find, here's the thing is that I do think this is true is that if you see a concert, and it costs you hundreds of dollars. That, to me, that it makes it like when I'm ranking all these concerts, like I does kind of make it less appealing to me because, like, I'll see a show sometimes and it would be a frigging awesome show for $25, but for like $350, it feels a little bit like it was underwhelming. So the best concerts to me are the ones that are actually in smaller venues or somehow, yeah, that just the circumstances of it all line up to just be this like euphoric experience.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like, honestly, for me, I love like psychedelic jam band kind of things, but yeah, the drugs that you take line up proper. Like I have had concerts experience where I've taken like, whatever, for whatever reason, the drug cocktail I chose didn't work, and then it ends up sort of being a bummer.
Well, that leads to one of my bad concert experiences, if you'll indulge me for
yes,
a sec.
Yes,
I don't want to move
on. No, let's hear it.
So I was seeing the Gorillaz 20 years ago at the Apollo. They were putting on a little residency where they were doing Demon Days from beginning to end with all the guest stars from the album, including De La Soul, and then Ike Turner. And then the reason I was there was for Nena Cherry and for Sean Ryder from the Happy Mondays, so two of my favorites who never, ever come to the States. So I went all the way to New York for the show, and this is when I was kind of obsessed with New York City. I thought I might move there and stuff. And, like, every single thing on this trip went wrong. It was a disaster, but it all culminated with the pot caramel that I brought to the Gorillaz show. I wasn't that experienced with edibles at that point, and so my friend had warned me, like, you know, this is very strong. It's, you know, it's all in the butter, and this is all butter, so be careful. And I just kept waiting for it to kick in. I'm not feeling it, and so I just keep having more and more. And then they're having all these technical problems with the show, and so they end up having no animation, which is, that's the Gorillaz whole thing, is the animation.
Right.
And so they start late, no animation, so they're just performing in the dark. It's kind of a dull show. You know, and you know everything is coming because they're going in the exact order of the album. Like, and so I was really let down. I'm like, freak New York. I end up going to a diner and they give me really lousy service. And at this point, I'm like, they haven't come and checked on me for like an hour. I'm just writing in my journal. I'm like, I'm going to dine and dash. I never dine and dash. I've never dined and dashed in my life. But this was the one time I decided to do this. And so I dined and dashed, and as I'm dining and dashing, that's when the pot caramel finally kicked in. And so I'm like, you know, really, really high on the streets of New York, at, you know, past midnight. And so I just go and get my palm read, and I don't remember a thing about it. And then I go back to my hostel, and I'm dehydrated as hell. And so I spent the entire night basically drinking water and trying to get to sleep, but then I had to go to the bathroom, so I basically just couldn't get me sleep. And anyway, De La Soul.
De La Soul. Yeah. Well, yeah, the old pot caramels and not kicking in at the right time, it happens. And then, wait, are you going to, here, let me turn up your mic, Emily.
Do you wonder what the palm reader told you, or do you remember?
I definitely wonder.
Yeah.
I definitely
wonder.
It's
like all the secrets of the rest of your life, and you just don't remember it. I like that was your impulse. You're like, I need to get my palm read. Right. This is very important.
Do I need to live in New York? Tell
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, yes.
Yeah.
You didn't listen.
She's like, get help. You're a mess.
Okay, let me buzz through these texts. This is Miss Pizza Johnny says the worst show for me was here we go, Jimmy. The Gorillaz. The live show just wasn't great. No energy. The sound was off, and the lead seemed like he was struggling. It was awful. Well, there you go. Jimmy had the similar worst show experience. So you guys are in
sync.
Damon,
step it up.
The best, I will say the Gorillaz, like, as Jimmy pointed out, they're this band, if you're not familiar with them, that it's all about this animated, like, the band is sort of these animated characters, so it relies on this Jumbotron technology, which I'm sort of, like, rallying against spontaneously on the show. But I do, it makes me think, when I think about it, I do think, like, some of my favorite concerts that I've seen did not have Jumbotrons, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
I gotta say, the Gorillaz were great on Saturday Night Live a little bit ago. Uh-huh. It was their first performance on Saturday Night Live. And they performed Feel Good Inc., and there was no animation. It was like, oh, okay. you guys still got it.
Okay, so maybe they're just a little bit hit or miss. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then Ms. Pizza Johnny says, the best show was A Perfect Circle in 2017. I've seen them live a few times, but that particular show was perfect. No big screens, no phones, just a perfectly curated show that was engaging and a musical experience. Yeah, I'm really dying to see Tool, which I believe is like the original band in A Perfect Circle, is like members of Tool, or maybe it's just the singer from Tool. But I really want to see that kind of music live. I love that. What, I don't know what you call that sort of psychedelic metal. Okay, this is the person who said the best concert they ever attended was the Vortex, says the worst concert that I ever was Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I expected a bunch of Russian ladyboy violinists. All I got was some white people and Christmas music.
I love that. Wait, so they were at the Vortex in 1970, that the state-sponsored concert where they sent everybody to, like, Milo McIver Park to, like, get all the hippies to, like, not protest Richard Nixon's visit. Do you know about this?
No. Well, see, so you must have been this person sent this text saying that, and I didn't know they ever did a concert at Milo McIver Park. But so what? I don't know.
Yeah,
this
was organized by Governor McCall, I believe, uh-huh, to get all the hippies out of Portland so they wouldn't protest Richard Nixon's visit. And
really?
So it was an amazing concert, apparently. I think there's a whole documentary about it.
Uh-huh.
And
but that was the Vortex?
Yeah, and it was a state-sponsored concert at Milo McIver Park for that very purpose.
Wow.
And it worked.
It worked.
Can you imagine something like that working today? Like, what would lure the...
Yeah, if you wanted to get all of the, like, protesters out, who would it be? How could you lure everyone out? It's tricky because I don't think anyone's very unified. Who would do it? Who could get the protest votes out? But the Vortex, is that an old band? Like, what?
I think that's the name of the festival.
Oh, it's Vortex. It was called.
If I'm understanding this text correctly.
Okay.
And if this person is of that age, I don't mean to age this person.
Let us know, texter. That was a funny Trans-Siberian Orchestra thing that you texted to. Okay. Liesl says, literally impossible to pick a favorite show. Best concert, I'd have to go with maybe Morphine and Morcheeba up at the amphitheater at the actual Rose Garden in Washington Park. Hot summer night like this, magical. Seeing Laurie Anderson was legendary. Yeah, she kind of reminds me. I mean, Laurie Anderson and Annie Lennox, I feel like, are similar spirits.
Yes.
And Just So on Lyrics Born doesn't get disappointed with his fans. I wouldn't put him in the world music hip hop genre. No shade. He usually performs with a live band backing. Okay, yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to. I was just saying that about the pickathon. But yeah, it does sound like he's not. World music might have been the wrong term, anyways. This text says, Annie Lennox is an amazing singer and a real star. She needs more chops for her being there first and bringing it. What do you think of that, Jimmy?
Yeah, she deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a second time as a solo artist, just like Stevie Nicks.
And this Genderbone says, I saw Amy Mann for some Christmas shows in my hometown of Tarrytown. I also saw her with Till Tuesday when they opened up for Tom Petty in 85 at the Meadowlands. I saw the Kinks at Pier 84 that year, too. Got to see The Clash with The Who in 82. I was 14 and my brother was 12. One of the best shows was U2 at Yankee Stadium with Primus and the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy, which is a Michael Franti band.
Great.
Wow.
U2 made my list for their show at the Sphere. I got really close to them. And I got to see Till Tuesday perform at their reunion show, first in like almost 40 years, last year in Pasadena at a New Wave festival. It was amazing.
Really?
Except that they played off. Literally, they turned the turntable around to go to the next band. Literally, as she's hitting the climax of Voices Carry, where she's like,
really?
He said, shut up! And it's like, what are you doing? You're silencing her in the big moment of the song.
I was going to say, because it's like Voices Carry is just like overwhelmingly their big hit. So I would have guessed that they would have to play that song like twice in order
to
cut it off.
I mean, I think they knew they were hitting the very limit of their of their allotted time. So
okay.
I think
that's a really, if you're an Amy Mann fan, if you look up like YouTube videos of her singing that particular song live, it's really strike. She is just such a striking singer. And that particular song was just like, there was nothing ever quite like it. This texter is saying, I've never seen a bad show at Mississippi Studios. Oh, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. There's certain venues.
Free, I saw that.
At Mississippi Studios?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, great show. Wow. So intimate.
Polyphonic Spree was, if you haven't heard of them, they were this band. So I've seen them a couple of times. They dress in white robes and they sing like kind of choir music, but it's like really awesome. They were kind of early aughts band. That would be that's a big band to see at Mississippi Studios. There's like 20, 30 people in that band. it's true. Certain venues are just like, it is like, you know, if you see a show at Mississippi Studios, even the Roseland, I find really, like, it can be very intimate. And then, the larger venue, and I was trying to explain this to my teenage daughters who've seen a lot of like big concerts, but they're not old enough to go into clubs yet. Is like the concerts are almost always better in smaller venues. It's just like your Moda Centers and your big stadium shows, it's really hard to get as good an experience.
And there are certain venues that are deal breakers for me. Like, I don't know if they're an advertiser, so I'll just say the venue that's at West Burnside and 13th, I will avoid seeing a show there.
Is that Crystal Ballroom? Yeah. Yeah, I don't really like that. Crystal Ball, because that is a weird, like, layout. It's like the stage is in the corner.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Upsets my feng shui aesthetics so much.
Emily, do you have a favorite concert you've ever seen?
I don't know. I was thinking about this. I like a good surprise. You know what I mean? I feel like I used to go to a lot of concerts when I was, like, younger, and then I kind of stopped going to as many, but I feel like a few years ago I saw Mumford & Sons at the Bend Outdoor Amphitheater, and it was like I didn't have huge expectations for it, and the lead singer was just like so good at performing. It was like, you know when you like leave something and you're just like, I feel so alive. I was like, I'm alive. My friend and I, we were just like losing our minds, but it was cool. They like came in the audience. In the middle of it and did like acoustic songs like right in front of us, and then we were just like, is this the best thing ever? So yeah, probably that. I like it when you're just like, this is just going to be a show, and then it's like, I don't know, it was great.
That he performs with Annie Lennox and Joni Mitchell and Brandi Carlile at those big jams and stuff.
Oh, and I saw Brandi I mean, she has an incredible voice. I saw her this year.
Wow.
And you're just like, this is amazing. But I know, I'd love to see them together.
Yeah, it's really great when an artist, I think, can like create a situation where they're bringing the whole room to attention.
Yes.
Janelle Monáe did that one time at the Roseland, where she just brought everybody, you know, to the floor. And it was just a really cool moment.
Yeah, I think the greatest performers are able to, they're sort of like conductors of the audience and everything. Like they're just able to really harness the audience energy.
Arcade Fire, like they at the Crystal, I think they led everybody out onto the street.
So. Oh, that's
even
cool.
With that crappy venue, they managed to create an amazing, memorable moment.
Let me get through some text. And oh, by the way, I totally blew through the top of the hour. You are listening to X-Ray FM at KXRY Portland at 107.1 and 91.1 FM, streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. I've got my guests Jimmy Radosta here and Emily Hempson is here. And Jimmy, like, time has really flown quickly because I just realized it's already past 10 o'clock.
Yeah, if it's my time, I'm...
No, please stick around. We've been talking.
I haven't so much...
But please text away. I want to take a break after I read these texts, and I want to talk to Emily about your experience as you were...
Hard loss.
You are not America's, I mean, not America's, Portland's funniest.
I'm not America's, but I'm not. You're not Portland's funniest. Comedian.
We think you're Portland's funniest. Yeah. Okay, let me just read these texts. This is, who said this? Okay. Ween at Edge, sorry, some of these texts I'm getting too late here. This says Ween at Edgefield was top 20 for me. Yeah, Ween is an awesome live show. And then at the $120 range, David Byrne this year is up there. Yeah, I saw David Byrne at Keller Auditorium. Amazing. Did you see that show?
Yeah. Same week as Bruce Springsteen, which is what started me making this top 20 list.
Really?
Because I was like, this show is going on some top list, and I have to make that list.
The David Byrne show or the,
no,
or
the Bruce? The Bruce show. I mean, yeah. David is, let's say, number 21. I mean, amazing show.
The David Byrne show was impressive to me. I thought that I was going to see some sort of, like, arty David Byrne stuff, and that he would do a few talking heads. But he did, like, mostly talking heads. Like, it was all, like, the big hits. Burning Down the House, Same as It Ever Was. Like, it was... And he had this, like, it was a very, very original, cool show. Like, the musicians were all in uniform, sort of marching around in different, there was, nobody was in one position. All the musicians had their instruments sort of strapped to them, and they were walking around, and choreographed, and, like, really interesting, visuals. And actually one thing I learned about that was that when he does those shows, he spends the day in the city with his camera, and he takes all these pictures from his day in the city, and then that turns into his, like, that's his visuals for the live show, which I thought was really, really smart. Like, so you're seeing shots of Portland taken that day in giant, like, huge projection behind the performers. I was, like, really impressed by that. Then the same texter, I'm not sure who it is, says, top five all time was the Quantum Collective, Blackalicious, Lyrics Born, Latif, the Tri-Speaker, DJ Shadow, Charlie Two, Nah, Cut the Chemist, all in one night.
Wow.
Cut Chemist. I don't even know most of those bands, but I do know Lyrics Born now. At Riverside in Chicago. Then, same texture says, Tool is great live, and then Radioheads would make a vortex happen for all of the aged Portlanders if Trump visited. Oh, you think Radiohead played.
They're the great uniter.
They're the uniter? I sort of feel that way, but, like, I'm trying to think if you really were trying to get, like, the real, like, troublemaker, like, protesters out of Portland. I'm trying to think what music they listen to. I don't know. Maybe there's some, you'd have to, like, be something else that would get him out of Portland. Then the same texter also says Ozo Motley was a top three for Crystal Ballroom shows. And this texter is called Mr. Moistache. Thank you for all your texts, Mr. Moistache. Sorry, it took me a while to get. So if you send a text and then you send another one before I read the first one, then it sends you back, the way this text thing, it sends you back to the line. That's why that happens. Okay. Annie Lennox, did I read this? Annie Lennox is an amazing singer and a real star. She needs more chops. I did read that. This and then says, I went to Vortex. My parents took me. Nixon was not involved. They had an American Legion convention in town, and people were pissed with Vietnam War.
Oh, okay.
Is that right?
It wasn't Nixon. But, yeah, it was going to be a big protest, basically. It was a big anti-war protest in Portland, and they had to get the hippies.
So this was during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. There was an American Legion convention, and they were like, "How do we get all the hippies out of town? So let's have a festival at Milo McIver Park."
Yes,
that is my what a great piece of history. I want to
Oregon.
Portland has some really funny stuff that happens in it. Jendabone says saw the Grateful Dead 29 times. Wow. Amazing shows. Jethro Tull is an all-time favorite. I do love Jethro Tull. My cousin makes fun of me when I play Jethro Tull. He calls it Hobbit Rock.
They won the very first Grammy Award for
metal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. It wasn't even a good album of theirs. That was considered like a complete travesty. Jethro Tull won the first Grammy Award for metal and beat out like Metallica, all these actual metal bands.
I remember when Metallica won their first Lars Ulrich said in his acceptance speech, I want to thank Jethro Tull for not putting out an album this year.
Everyone was so mad about that when that happened. It was a terrible Jethro Tull album, too. Like, Jethro Tull has some amazing albums, and that album, I think, was called Crest of a Knave, and it was, like, their worst album. Anyways, then Genderbone says, love seeing the Allman Brothers in Tucson and then Madison Square Garden. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young I was lucky to see. Love seeing 10,000 Maniacs with The Cure at Jones Beach Theater in 86, 7/7/86, and Sting there decades later. Really lucked out to see Ween open for the Dead Milkmen at Wetlands in 91. I remember Wetlands was this club in the like lower Manhattan that played like all the kind of, it was all the jam bands that I saw, and that like it was like Blues Traveler and Spin Doctors and all that kind of stuff. But I remember seeing shows at the Wetlands and like smoking weed in the basement there and stuff. Teddy Huck Dogs here. Best show I saw was my first Dead Kennedys at a club called City Gardens in Trenton, New Jersey, fall of 86. Your first concert was your best concert. Interesting.
Happy 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
Coming up.
My first concert was Rush at Madison Square Garden, and it was amazing. It was a great concert. Totally got me into seeing concerts.
I just had the 40th anniversary of my first concert last month. It was Eurythmics at the Coliseum.
Uh-huh.
Fourth row. I blew Annie Lennox a kiss, and she reciprocated.
Wow.
And I was standing on this rickety chair, and I remember I almost passed out. Like it was too much for me. I was... And I was by myself. My parents drove me up from Salem, dropped me off in the big city.
Of Portland.
And I got to see this amazing concert. It was
How come you were going by yourself? Like, you were just
I knew no other Eurythmics fans. And I guess I was too cool to go with my parents.
Do you think this... So how old were you at this point?
You're 14.
14. And you're definitely, like, in the closet. But did you know that you were attracted to guys at this point?
Pretty much, but I just hadn't kind of put it together in so many words.
So I'm just sort of forming this theory right now, but like, were you thinking like maybe I'm attracted to Annie Lennox because she's like so masculine? Like, were you like,
no, that wasn't a thing, but I admired her. I just, I was like, I want to be her, like,
you just admire her,
like, nephew.
Okay. Well, all right. Let me take this break that I was going to take a long time ago. I asked you, Jimmy, to pick out a song to play during the break, and explain why you picked it. So tell me what the song was that you picked.
Well, we have two. Which one should I do? The fast one or the slow one?
Let's do the fast one.
Okay. Yes. So Madonna, she turned 68 on Sunday, and she's still operating at the top of her game. Her new album is a sequel to Confessions on a Dance Floor, which came out 20 years ago. And it's one of her most personal albums ever. She's got songs about her ex-husband, Sean Penn, her sort of strained relationship with her daughter, which is a duet with her, Lola slash Lourdes. Her strained relationship with her stepmother, who died a few years ago. Her strained relationship with her brother, who she reconciled with shortly before he died of cancer a couple years ago. And this song, which is all about the history of the dance club where she got her start in 1982, and she name drops everybody who was there. So listen carefully. You'll hear David Byrne, who we just mentioned, along with a bevy of other folks, including a lot of amazing gay men who died of AIDS. And this is an amazing tribute to them. And it's also a banger.
What's the name of the song?
Danceteria.
Oh, Danceteria. I was waiting for you to tell me what the name was so I could look it up. This is Danceteria. Yeah, there was this club. Was it in Manhattan called Danceteria?
Yeah, I think it was at a few locations.
Okay.
But
all right.
And the Beastie Boys were there as well, which is kind of crazy that they occupied the same sort of zone. And also actress Debbie Mazar gets a shout out because she was the elevator girl and did her makeup. And anyway, but the Beastie Boys opened for Madonna when she played her Portland debut in 1985 at the Schnitz.
Okay.
And by the way, she did not return to Portland until 2016. And I think it was because she had such a lousy experience here making that awful movie Body of Evidence in the early 90s. That's my theory.
Interesting. Okay. Well, oh, yeah. So this is Danceteria off of Madonna's new album. Here we go. Oops.
Walk to the club, don't wait for shit. Meet this boy named Martin Burgoyne. He's my best friend, he's my boy toy. We see the line, it's way too long. Cut to the front, there's Harry Montauk. Waves us in, no empty endless. I'm not sure you'll understand this.
Wait. Money to burn, lounge, loser has so much power. Lower East Side, take a walk on the wild side. X-Ray FM is supported by Slingshot Lounge. Located in Southeast Portland on the corner of 56th and Foster, Slingshot Lounge offers an expansive game room, scratch cocktails, and a craft kitchen with a full menu until 2 a.m. Happy hour available weekdays from 3 to 7, and brunch weekends from noon to 4. Slingshot Lounge, decentralizing Portland since 2007.
Hello, 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 hello. We are back. This is Sex, Drugs, and Basketball. If you're listening on Thursday, August the 13th, 2026, you've tuned into a live broadcast of this show. We've been having a really fun time with guest Jimmy Radosta. Emily Hempson is here, and we want to hear, Emily. So you and I were in touch. I was out of town last week, and I would definitely have been there, and
I lost by one singular vote.
I would have been the vote to push you over the top.
I was like, where's Arthur? I thought he was
So, listeners who may be familiar with Emily, you often like to come here after doing open mics around town. Did you do an open mic tonight?
I did do an open mic tonight. Yeah.
And you were in Portland's Funniest Person, which
competition.
Is a competition, yeah. Which is like, it happens like, for weeks, and it goes
for
on
months.
And on.
Months.
Is it months?
Yeah, it's been going on since like May. And we only just finished the preliminary rounds. Now there's like three rounds and then the finals.
So what, how did it go? Tell
it,
us.
It, I did not make it through. I didn't get a turn against the audience. I do wish I did at the end, because it's like they make you stand on stage, everyone, and then they read the names out, which is the worst, because I know that my face did not hide my feelings, because I just can't sometimes. And I just, at the last, it was fine. I mean, I did know I wasn't making it through. At a point. But I do wish we could, like, it's horrible. That's the worst part, just knowing you're going to have to stand on the stage and not.
What? How many comics are participate in that? Like, how many were you on the stage? At
15
the
of us.
15. And yeah. Three make it through?
Three make it through.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people went over. My round was so weird. It was just like, normally you'll either have a lot of women or no women. This one had, like, four women, but, like, two women. Oh, no, I guess. Four. Well, five women. I don't know. Had maybe five women. And two of the women, like, didn't do stand-up, like, at all. So they were there, and they were just running the light. And it was just wild. And there were a few comics like that who were just the funniest guy in the office who, like, did the competition. And I was kind of like, sweet. Run the light. Get disqualified.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't help me even there. Why? I still didn't make it. But I also did dress kind of slutty, which was a bad move. And I knew it was a bad move because all my jokes were about sex, which I was like, I knew it, and I knew there was like a risk in that, and it did not pay off. But I did have like four sort of like 25-year-old girls come up to me after, and they were like, you're our favorite comedian. And I was like, you're my demographic. I was speaking to you. Like, this is, my comedy is for you. They were like, we didn't come for anyone. Uh-huh. And they were like very, you know,
that's
fine
good.
With that. Which, so I was kind of like, it's okay that I was like wearing a slutty.
But I would have thought that would, I would think
okay
that would be a good, yeah. Why was a slutty
no
outfit,
shame.
Why would that, why was that a
because
disadvantage?
It's like the crowd was, the audience are like the friends of the comics. And so because a lot of the comics were like dudes or sort of like, I'm trying to think of what I'm saying. Just like, I am not who they want to see do comedy. And then they're like, and women, they only talk about sex. And that's like what I did do, you know?
Uh-huh.
Also, I don't know. Yeah, it was so ridiculous. But my favorite thing about it is they do like a roast of the comedians after, like the hosts do. So during it, they write jokes. And I know the host like really well. Like, we're good friends. And so he knows that when I close my eyes, I see darkness. I have this thing like called aphantasia. And he sort of said this as his joke about me, but it sounded like he was saying I was dumb. I don't even know what his joke was. And these four girls who came up to me after were like, we were so mad when he did that. Because the audience went really quiet. They were like, we were looking at him and we were like, she's not dumb. And I was like, well, thank you for standing up for me. And also for like, this roast joke went so badly, you know.
That's such a Portland audience thing to do.
Oh,
to be like offended on your behalf.
I know. I was like, I don't see anything, though, you know. But then I was kind of like, this is a bad joke. Come up with a better one.
Bam. Well, I am. It's I. I was.
But I did lose by one vote. Arthur's vote.
You didn't really get it. I would have voted for it. I do think those contests, as it goes almost without saying, they're not necessarily the funniest person goes through, but the person who deals with getting the most of their friends to come and vote. It's like, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, because it is like a bringer show. And the winner of it will be the funniest. Like, I feel like they're, or a particular kind of funniest. Uh-huh. It's a weird, comedy is subjective. You know, like, I do think that's something I'm kind of like, I don't need everyone to like me.
Yeah.
But also, like, I could have tried harder. I could have worn, like, jeans and, like, a sweater. I was like... Well, not wearing a lot of clothes.
I feel like our radio show, the significant voting power of this this audience did not
hundreds
come
of
through
thousands
because
of
I was out of town and I didn't promote properly that you were doing that.
It's Arthur's fault.
So
yeah, I would have won.
I do feel partially responsible. You
know, hey, now you've got material.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It is.
Let's get you into the Lamb Week funniest five.
Oh yeah, that one I think is an easier one to know. Because, they can't repeat people, and I don't know. I've stage managed that show a few times, and it is interesting. It's always an interesting mix of people.
Is that also kind of an arbitrary?
That one's very arbitrary. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll be like, huh. And it is like they can't repeat. So sometimes you're like, this person, it's almost like you just have to figure out who to get in front of, you know?
Yeah.
Or who your friends are. I think that's, but it's like, it's not like funny people. They're good. The comics you went through are good.
I get it.
But it's always just like a weird group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me read some text messages. Oh, and by the way, I just noticed this, Jimmy, that I don't know why he was texting me on my phone. Do you know Thomas Lauderdale?
I do.
I don't know if he's still listening, but instead of texting the radio show, he texted my personal phone but was answering the questions that we were talking about on the radio show. So this is his concerts. If you're not, he's the leader of Pink Martini, very talented musician. He said, Prince in Worcester, Massachusetts for the Love Sexy Tour in 1988.
Wow.
I went with my Harvard classmate, Kevin Young, an amazing poet from Kansas, became the head of the Smithsonian after Native American Museum of Art and Culture. Then Bjork at La Luna, Portland, Oregon, 1993, or four or five. Oh, come on over if you're coming over. Do you know those people? Are they here for
this
show?
I'll tell you later.
Okay. Nina Simone at the Arlene Schnitzer Music Hall. That would be an amazing show. Barry Manilow last summer at the Moda Center. Thomas has a long list here. Then Herb Alpert at the Tijuana Brass last summer. The Brass came
over
for cocktails after the concert at the Schnitzer. Then Jesse Norman at the Symphony Hall, Boston, 1988. Then he writes, Jimmy Radosta is super sexy and he works for the coolest city. And then,
you can say that. Go
okay.
Ahead.
And the coolest city councilor.
Yeah.
It's okay. The Olivia Clark. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you wanted all that.
Yeah. As long as we don't go beyond that.
and then says, Jesse Norman. Oh, and one of Johnny Mathis's last concerts a year ago in Fort Lauderdale. Those are Thomas Lauderdale's.
That's so sweet.
I think
Thomas.
That was about 10.
And I love that he represents for the oldies. I saw Barry Manilow last summer and it was the best concert of the year.
That was the same one Thomas was talking about?
No, he was talking about Herb Alpert, but just as far as octogenarians and nonagenarians, it was so good. It was like the only time that my taste overlapped with my dad and my stepmom's taste. And so I took them. And he put on an amazing show, I'm not a fan of Lowe, I'm not big into him, but boy, he's an openly gay, artist now and thriving in his, at 82 at the time, I think at the time they saw me, he was struggling with some lung cancer, he just kicked ass and he did a fabulous, he did Donna Summer's, arrangement of Could It Be Magic, the disco version, and that's, I was just queening out, so I was very satisfied.
Barry Manilow. Yeah, I mean, he does have a lot of great songs. It's like, Woodchip Dave just showed up. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hi. How are you doing?
You look like clean and fresh. Are you?
I know,
you
I took a shower.
Yeah, usually, I put on usually you show up, you and Dylan would show up in your like wood cutting clothes.
You would like leave work. No, I went home and took a shower. It okay. Like, seemed like I almost came right from work, but I was like working late.
Okay.
I do.
Well, good to see you, man.
You as well.
Do you know Thanks Jimmy?
Sure. No. You guys good to meet you.
Hello. I'm Woodchip Dave, as I'm known on the radio. I mean, that's.
We used to call him Dave the Wood Guy, and then guy. Someone started calling him Woodchip Dave.
I think Woodchip Dave sounds more comedic, so I'll go with that. Either or. Could be Sawdust Dave.
Sawdust
too.
Dave.
I mean, it's like. But I really do wood chips.
I also met Dave through the storytelling, and I met Jimmy.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Let me just get. Jendabone says, I was at the Spin Doctors and Blues Travelers show at the Wetlands too, Arthur. Yeah, maybe we're at the same shows. The guy that did sound and recorded the shows got a bunch of us in to see Spin Doctors at Vassar College. My favorite shows nowadays are Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons and also Casey Neal, either solo or with the Norway Rats. I know you talk about Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons. We played him a few times. I haven't seen him, but I believe he's good. I trust you on that one. Then this is speaking. This text says, speaking of best shows, concerts, I saw Death Cab for Cutie in December 2006 on a cold, rainy night in New Orleans. OK Go was the support. Lead vocalist of OK Go, Damian Kulash, was running a high fever and feeling unwell. He absolutely killed it that night. Ben Gibbard performed Translaticism solo with a small plant on top of his piano.
Wow.
The city was barely recovering after Katrina. The show was a semblance of normalcy, and me being an impressionistic young freshman, it's a show I think about regularly. Oh, that's a nice tableau you painted there. I'm not sure who this is who's texting this, but Malcolm is texting us, I believe. Yeah, that's it. It is some of the best concert. It has to do with the timing, you know.
Yeah,
like the
timing is everything. I remember seeing Ben Gibbard, as a matter of fact, solo at the Mississippi Studios on my lunch break when I was working at Planned Parenthood a few blocks away, and it was like one of those free radio promo shows. But it was like, I can't believe this is what I get to do on my lunch break in Portland. Is just walk over and see Ben Gibbard perform a few songs and then go back to work. But that's what makes Portland so special.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I guess when we were texting about things to talk about, you had mentioned, I guess it sort of fits in with our sex stuff, but you used to work at Planned Parenthood. I don't know if there's some things you wanted to say about that, or like, it's an interesting organization and like, what's
yeah,
your...
just, I mean, I was there for 11 years and, Oregon, we should be very proud. I mean, I was only there for, 11 specific years. So obviously I was there building on a lot of amazing work that came before. But we were able to pass in coalition with a lot of amazing organizations, the most progressive reproductive health equity policy in the nation. In the middle of the first Trump administration. So it expanded access to reproductive health coverage for undocumented Oregonians and transgender Oregonians who were, denied coverage just because of their gender marker on their insurance. And then people were denied because they had some old grandfathered Affordable Care Act plans. Mm-hmm. And it also protected abortion in statute in Oregon law. So it was incredible stuff. Some of it got overturned in courts just a couple years, or like a year ago. But still, big stuff. Oregon, as of when I left in 2022, was the leading state for reproductive freedom. I'm not sure if we're still there, but still, we have a lot to be proud of. Unfortunately, the organization that I was at, Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon, is not. It got dissolved, and so it's not quite as. It's not quite the same organization anymore, but they're doing obviously super important work both at the health centers and also in the political advocacy space.
Well, I think that's cool. I do think we forget. I feel like Planned Parenthood gets so like associated with just abortion only, and it's such like an awesome organization. So I did want you to talk about that, and that's how I met you. Is you were organizing this show that was a benefit for them.
And we should never forget that abortion is always on the ballot, especially in the governor's race.
That
Don't ever
true.
Assume that in this state that we will always be a blue state. We are. It's not guaranteed. Don't forget that.
Yes, let's vote. Let's that massive vote that would have put Emily over the top and the Portland's funniest person. You can still use your votes in other ways too. Yeah. Let me just read this text. It's a little bit. We didn't really talk much about basketball, so it says switching to basketball. The Blazers' schedule just came out, and it looks like stocking up on scorers and ball handlers will help us get through the year and be in good shape for the playoffs. I think the new coach will be so much better integrating the players into a well-oiled machine. I love your optimism. Who this is the Vortex person. I don't know. I'm very concerned about this upcoming season for the Blazers because I'm not a believer in the Ja Morant pickup. I like Ja Morant. I think he's an interesting guy, but I don't think the team, it was a strange move construction wise. They didn't really need a player like that. He's also kind of controversial and not as good as he used to be. And then I'm just worried about this new owner. Seems like a real piece of work, and I'm worried he doesn't want to be in Portland, and he's trying to figure out a way to get the team out. And I just hope that doesn't happen. I don't think it will happen.
Same.
I'm optimistic that it's really hard for him to get out. So my personal hope is that they kind of like he has to sort of show that he has to come to terms with the fact that he's part of this city and he can't just sit in Texas and lob insults at us.
Hi-o Silver to the rescue.
Adam Silver, yeah. Yes. Hopefully, yeah, it seems to me it would be a very bad look for the NBA. Portland really, the Blazers, it would gut the city of Portland. I mean, I think there's few things you could do that would just economically devastate a major American city or whatever you would call Portland. More than just like ripping this team out and moving it to wherever else he is trying to do it, Kansas City or something like that. It just would be so like, it's not like when the Sonics left Seattle, that was a tragedy and bummed a lot of people out, but Seattle can survive that. They have a lot of other things. Portland would really mess up our economy. Like, I'm sorry. It's like sports fan or not, it would be a horrible thing to lose the Blazers. And it's just sad that we're in this like hostage situation with this guy. I guess we were talking about that. Ms. Pizza Johnny says, Barry Manilow has been on my list to see for years. I fear I might not get my chance to see him. I was in the audience for a TV show many years ago when he was going to perform. When we got there to film, it turned out that he filmed his spot the day before, so we only got to see the taping of his show and react. I missed him by a day. It was a bummer. That is a bummer of a story. Yeah. Sorry to hear that. You missed Barry Manilow. Tall Tim says, I love Emily. She's a good spirit. Rubbing eagerly on the edges. I'm not sure what that means. That's what he wrote. I don't know.
Rubbing
eagerly on the edges.
I don't know either.
She was really into your comment until the rubbing eagerly on the edges, and then she was trying.
Emily. I was like, yeah, keep going, Tall Tim. I love you too. That's all I need to hear. But now I'm like, part of me is like, is this? Have you seen me perform stand up? I probably talked about rubbing on things that would make sense. So I don't know.
Emily is great. She's always got like questions. She's always fascinated by everyone here.
Always fascinated.
Yeah, I agree. I do think, you know, you should be in the Portland's funniest.
Yeah, I was
contest.
Robbed.
You
I
were
will
robbed.
Say
it's a robbery.
I should have gone after the audience when I didn't win and been like, I don't care what any of you think of me. I just want to turn against them, but you can't. It's like the impulse to do it was there because I talked about doing it before. But I don't know. Then you're like, if everyone here already doesn't like me very much.
Yeah.
They did not
let
laugh.
Let me put my field organizing skills to use and build you an audience before your next show.
Yeah. I don't even
I'll start
need
recruiting
them,
an audience.
I don't want it. I'll just
that's
tell
what you
people
have
I
to
want
do.
Something else.
And then because do once I? You get past that first, I think that's what the first round is. You just have to gather your troops together for the first round. Then it can be on the merits when you get into the upper, because then people are going maybe not so just to.
And
to,
you get more time. You get like 6 minutes. Because when they say they disqualify you at like 4 minutes, it's just that got in my head and I was like, I don't even know how fast I'm talking. Like, I don't think I was my best form either, you know?
But I appreciate your authenticity. You did not want a false victory.
Wait, what?
You did not want a false victory, right?
No, also, like, they can come to something else. You know, like, that I will talk for longer. It's just helium is not... I don't need it, you know? That's what I'm trying to say is I hate it. And I'll never forgive it for letting me down. And also the fans of this radio show, I'm sorry.
Denver Dan texting in says... What Portland doesn't need the Trailblazers. You still have drugs, homelessness, strippers, and hippies, way more than other cities. This is a guy listening from Denver. Just and he's being cheeky here.
I think that might be somebody I know who just goes by the handle Denver Dan.
Oh, really?
I think.
We do. It's not just because I'm a basketball fan. I have to say it. Like, I love the Portland Trailblazers. I love that. To me, it's such a cool identity to be a city that only has this one thing, this basketball team that we love so much. So it would really, like, I would be so pissed at the NBA if they let this happen. And that's why I kind of don't. I've heard a lot of good, like, analysis about, like, how hard it would be for him to actually just pick up and find a place to move, and that he's not. It's kind of. It's. I don't think he's bluffing. I think he would like to move, but I don't think it's as easy and ultimately as cost effective as he might think it would be. I also think this guy actually is a billionaire, but I don't think he actually has that much money. Like that's become apparent in a lot of the stuff that's come out is that he's one of those. I guess billionaires whose money is all wrapped up in loans and leverage and stuff like that. Like he cannot afford, I think, to pay for this work. Like people keep saying, oh, this is a handout to a billionaire, but I don't think he actually has the money to do the work like he needs the city to pay for it. So part of his like tough guy attitude is like he doesn't have them. It's not like he just has millions of dollars lying around to. There was some emails that came out that showed that the Trailblazers were trying to get the city to start to release funds or the county or someone who would to release funds early so they could start working on this. And it seemed like the reason they wanted that, like that was a sort of an unusual request is because they just didn't have the money to do it. Like they didn't. So anyways, I could talk about this more than I should.
He just seems like such a bummer, though, right?
Yeah, he
You're
is.
Like, who's this guy? Like, you yeah. have all. I just think, what a lame guy. He's no fun.
All of it. I think all. I know. Like, I mean, this is a random sampling, but my friends all around the NBA who live in other cities, like everybody knows that this new owner of Portland is kind of a D-bag. Like, it's just known. He's just considered cheap. He's considered like just kind of like he's not making any effort to like be part of the city. And yeah, he just has a terrible reputation so far. But I'm sure he thinks that he lives in Texas and he's probably his buddies are telling him he's really sticking it to the liberals in Portland or something. I don't really know.
He's the worst.
Okay. This is Tall Tim says, Emily, he's explaining his rubbing eagerly on the edges is that you freely push boundaries.
Oh. Yeah.
That's what he meant, rubbing eagerly on the edges. And then says, also, Tall Tim says, maybe start off with glasses and a blouse, then lose it on the way. Like,
let me just also take my clothes off during this? That's what strippers do. I want them to take me seriously, Tall Tim. But I also, like, get hot, and I don't want to wear big baggy clothes. So I can't take a blouse. I can't strip while doing it. They don't respect me already. Have you heard my voice? I don't even sound smart.
You do sound smart.
I don't know. It's upsetting to me. I thought I sounded smarter until I heard my voice.
Denver Dan writes, Arthur for Portland's funniest... looking.
Oh,
ba-dum-bum. Yeah.
He's crying now. He's really sad. That
you
was really
got
mean.
Me. All right. Yeah, we only have actually like a minute left in the show, so let's just wrap it up. Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on the show. You were like really fun. I hope you'll come back sometime because I feel like we didn't even talk about it, half the stuff we were.
Yeah, I didn't
to talk
get
about.
To play my other song. So I'll oh, yeah, for the next time.
But yeah, you were fun to have on. Emily, please come back and I hope you do win next time.
Yeah, didn't open up this year though. Just go to my show.
Yeah. Woodchip Dave, anything?
This is nice to be here. Thank you.
Bye.
And this episode will be on the archives. Bye. Thank you. All right.